go back like maybe fast.
Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Oh, yeah.
They can do what it do, people.
Let's go. Woo-woo.
Talking sports with a 12 man.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Let's get it.
John Cena was in recently, too, man. That little WWE things happening, man. So we do, man. But as we switch gears, we're officially talking sports with the 12th man coming to you on a Tuesday, only because Mr. Rob Ford, he's trying to be like a Tribe Called Quest going universal and worldwide. So we're going to, like, you know,
uh-oh,
keep it to you on this March, April the 3rd. I'm literally wrapping up my days here. So gentlemen, hope you had a good Easter. All that good
jazz. You're a month behind, man. You got to catch up with the times, man.
He's still on trivia, I'm telling
you. What's funny, you know what's funny, Rob, because there's a question about the dastardly Robert Ford who killed Jesse James today, man. So there's a movie, the coward Robert Ford that killed Jesse James, man. So I think about you all the time, man.
Just everybody in the world, oh, that's not me. That was hundreds of years ago.
That coward is so funny. Every time the coward Robert Ford that killed Jesse James.
Oh,
it's an actual movie, man.
Dave, that movie came out, Andre wouldn't let it down, boy. I tell you.
Oh, yeah, no.
Every time I let that ride. That's right. I was waiting for it, too, man. First time it comes, I take a screenshot to the drive, man. So, anytime you talk junk, Rob, I'm always ready, bro. So, anyway,
that's the go-to.
Sorry, America.
Yeah,
that is the go-to. I got a couple of them in the
It's like the other day when Nick, you were traveling,
yeah.
I tell you, Andre wasn't even in the conversation until you did you say something about it.
Oh, yeah. Jump right in. Oh, there you go again, Rob.
Rob be trying too, man. I just be like,
never fails,
you know, myself, you, ring.
Never.
Myself,
you found a way to wake Andre up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm awake, man. I'm just sitting there watching. I got things to do, man. I got time to, like, do that. So y'all, you know, adjust me. You remember, I was this guy named Mark. Every time Mark, I would talk, like, junk to Mark, he would always respond, man. So it's like finding those things.
I know, that's right. I remember that, too, yeah. Mark would be in the background, and you say something about him, boom.
We get out of nowhere.
It works.
Anyway, so let's keep this moving here. And, yeah, I apologize. Yeah, I had an eventful day, so we're trying to wrap up this evening. But, again, if I will get it correct, we are officially in April here. Time is flying by. And let's kick it off here. Let's check in with my boy, JQ. How you feeling this evening, sir?
Hey, man, you woke me up with that one. Man. I'm on a war tour with Muhammad, my man, going each and every place with the mic in my hand. Come on, man. You don't know nothing about
right.
that, dog. Little Tribe Called Quest for y'all. I mean, I'm doing good, man. Watched that amazing game last night, you know, hanging out with my girls over spring break. Life is good.
I'm glad you made it home safely, too, bro. So that's a good thing, man.
Appreciate it.
Fun traveling and everything like that, too. Rob Ford, how you feeling this evening, sir?
Man, doing great, man. Let's get this party started, man.
And just to contradict any reports, we're not going to trade Rob Ford. We're going to keep him for now. So we're not trading Rob Ford. Just so you know.
Oh, no, man. We get two first round picks. We got to think about it. I'll play it. I'll play it.
Unless a good offer comes.
Oh,
no,
man.
It's all good.
Are y'all scouting on the radio personalities like the Seahawks are scouting Josh Allen?
put little feelers out. No, I'm just live now. I'm just reading something, man. Obviously, this is a sports talk conversation, so we're having fun. We can get ready. Officially, really quickly, you want to call any boys? You always have a good time doing sports talk here, and I apologize. I'm really lit because I have so much energy happening, man, so I got to calm down. So forgive me. But if you want to call in, the number to always call in is 424. No, man. I was taking one. 424-243-9519. And quickly, before I try to get in trouble with America here, that's the number to call. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/12thmansports or Talking Sports with the 12th Man. And let's get this party started, gentlemen. We got a lot of things to discuss. And to much to my chagrinment, we're going to kick it off with the Nationals and the Braves. I really hate Bryce Harper right about now. But anyway, I'll let you lead off with this, JQ. Your thoughts about this game, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't Atlanta winning this game right now? Like 13-5 or something?
They won it 13-6.
He went nuts. But listen, I'm on the same train because they came in Cincinnati opening weekend and just beat the brakes off the Reds. So, you know, that Washington team, I mean, you had to know Atlanta was going to be and still a little bit of a rebuild. They're not quite there yet. The prospects and the farm system is still pretty good, but they're not quite there yet across the board, major league talent. And that Washington team, despite what happened tonight, I think is really ready to, you know, to challenge in that in the National League. You know, that rotation when you can get Scherzer and Strasburg, and if you ever get Gio to stay right, and then the way they can hit with the aforementioned Bryce Harper and Michael Taylor and them boys and Zimmerman, they just got a good team. And I'm not a Nationals fan, but you got to give credit where credit is due. That Washington team is going to be for real this year.
Yeah, totally agree. Obviously, the Braves gave them their first loss of the season tonight, and Washington came in 4-0. The Braves beat them 13-6 and move a game within the game of the Nationals there in the National League East. So now the Nationals 4-1, and the Braves move up to 3-2. But yeah, as JQ mentioned, Washington with that pitching staff is they're going to be tough to beat this season.
They are definitely the team to beat. Another thing I have to say, too, is, like, we'll talk about a lot of things happening. You know, all our Philly fans, we definitely greased the polls for you. And I was just happy that, you know, we won that first series. You know, even though y'all were a little high, you know, with, you know, the Eagles and Villanova, stuff like that. You know, we won the series, man. So, but, again, getting back to the Nationals, they are definitely, guys, a team to beat. I agree with both of you guys. And right now, I know, and JQ, I can't wait for you to give me some more details, too, about Ronald Acuna. I know they're kind of holding him out so they can control that contract later on, too. So whenever you get some things about that, too.
Yep.
But, you know, I think whenever they add him at that, you know, we'll see how the Braves are. I mean, they're not quite there yet, as you said. But, you know, at least we're just not, you know, the rebuild is actually going good. We're hoping and praying that we sort of can, this is like a pipe dream getting to where, you know, the Astros were just kind of like building and stuff like that, too. So we can, you know, I'm not saying World Series, but hopefully just have that farm system kind of come in and hopefully we can do some things, too. So, you know, it's a good thing. But again, right now, as you both have said, the pitching staff, you know, the way they've been hitting, the Nationals are definitely the team to beat, guys. Let's talk about.
Daniel Braves and Camargo back, too, pretty soon. So don't forget about Camargo.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still, like I said, normally we've been known to have a really strong pitching staff. So, again, it's just, I don't know, we've been having some trouble finding that, you know, dominant pitching as of now. So, again.
Oh, man, it's been 20-some
like
years since the Braves had a dominant pitching staff.
They have, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's exactly what I'm talking about, Rob. It's not like a knock. I'm saying it's tough to try to find, you know, we've always been known for that. And it's interesting how we've, you know, you've written more hitting this year than we still haven't had that, you know, dominant staff again. So, I mean, again, everyone's looking for that, but this is one of those things, too, that
it's
we're going to have. So, we have, it is what it is.
I just tell you, you got Soroka and you got Gohara and you got Newcomb is going to be better, I believe. I mean, you got some, you know, I just know way too much about this. But you got some good pitchers studs on the way, I think, for y'all. So, you know, just got to hold tight and let them develop. But I think you got two or three that can come and make a statement.
Greg Maddux ain't walking through that door.
No, neither
Maddox,
John Smoltz.
We know,
John Smoltz not walking through that door.
Tom
Glavine's not walking through that door.
Remember that man, Steve Avery back in the day? Man.
You got to worry about Avery, yep.
Doyle Alexander for John Smoltz. That trade right there, man, that's crazy, man. Top Van Poppel didn't want to play for us. We get Chipper Jones. That's crazy, man. So, anyway, that goes back because I was raised on that perspective. All right, let's talk about this here. Let's recap here. A couple of lottery situations here with the Hawks at the Heat. Obviously, the Hawks lost this game tonight. go ahead, Robin. Kind of kick off, bro. You can talk about the Hornets and the Bulls.
Yeah, obviously, the Hawks gave the Heat all they can handle. Assigned Whiteside with a tip-in with about a minute left in the game. Kind of nailed the victory down for the Miami Heat. Miami Heat clinched a playoff spot with this game. So they're looking at somewhere around a 7 or 8 seed.
Higher pick.
We're looking at either a matchup with either Boston or Toronto there in the first round. And, and you know, the Heat getting Hassan Whiteside back, you know, it's going to be interesting with that team in the playoffs. It depends on what Kyrie Irving is going to do with the Celtics, if he's going to be back in time or not. I mean, I don't think they can beat Toronto, but a Kyrie Irving-less Celtics team could be interesting. Not saying they'll beat them, but it'll definitely be interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're not going to beat Boston with or without Kyrie. But, yeah, instead of being 4-0, it could be 4-2. I'll give you that.
Yeah. What about Heat and the Bulls, guys? I'm sorry, the Hornets and Bulls.
Go ahead, Rob. Hornets and Bulls, go ahead, Rob. Are you in these lottery?
Yeah, obviously, I think the Eastern Conference is pretty much set on the playoff team, so I think we can officially say that the Hornets are not going to be making the playoffs. At the one point,
they're
trying to knock on the door, and but, yeah, they're not going anywhere. Lauri Markkanen with an impressive game tonight, 8 of 14 shooting, 5 out of 6 from three-point range, 24 points. He's got a bright future for the Chicago Bulls. They win at home, 120 to 114 over the Charlotte Hornets. I'm about to call them the Bobcats. I just remember they went back to the Hornets. Dwight Howard, the forgotten about NBA player, 23 points tonight as well, 17 rebounds for the Hornets. But they, in a losing effort, they lose to the Bulls by 6 points. That's a team
better than
what they are, man. Look, you got Kemba Walker, Nicholas Batum, Dwight Howard, Kid Gilchrist, Marvin Williams. It's a
Malik Monk is not done what he needed to do. I thought Malik Monk would do better more for them this year than he has, and I know some of his minutes, but you know, he just hasn't translated it yet. I don't get what's wrong with Charlotte as well. I mean, I expect the Bulls to be this bad. They're in full blown rebuild. But I thought Charlotte would challenge for that 7-8 spot, you know, with the Miamis.
Yeah,
sure, bro. So.
Monk had 21 points off the bench tonight.
Yeah.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually played well. Yeah. I think it's a chemistry thing, gentlemen. With the Hornets, because there's something's not right with that squad, man. So that's what I would say. From that perspective, because, you know, Rob, you said it, man, they have too much talent, and I don't know if it's a coaching thing or if it's just, you know, what else, but they definitely have to take the next step too, man, so they got too much talent for sure. Not sure if this guy's playing radio, and this is your boy, JQ, Shannon Sharp, thinks that LeBron James should win the MVP over James Harden, and obviously I know I'm just kind of like trying to egg this on too. Now, I guess, do you agree with the statement or what?
Well, we had this conversation, and I don't think he should win it over him. I would be comfortable with them being co-MVPs because the two of them are just having out of this world fantastic years. But you know how it goes with the MVP. It's going to go generally to the best player on the best team. But my only thing is, if you swapped Harden with LeBron and gave him that team, they may not blow as many people out because LeBron's not the three-point shooter that Harden is, but I still think they win a buttload of games with the way that Houston team is constructed. Houston's a better team, 1-15, than Cleveland is. That's why I think what LeBron is doing with Cleveland, basically having a team, swapping out half of your starters, or four of your starters, and bringing in, you know, another whole crew and staying at that level. I mean, they can't get the one seed. Of course, Toronto's having a fantastic regular season. But to still be in that conversation for a three seed, I mean, the year that he's having right now is in the year 15 is out of control. But all that being said, it's going to go to Harden. And then, you know, LeBron is only taking a little bit of the luster off of what Harden is having because you have to talk about LeBron and everything he's doing. My word, James Harden is having a fantastic year. I can't get on TV and say that LeBron should win it over him. But Shannon is definitely a LeBron fan. And he's going to give him more benefit of the doubt. And, you know, sometimes rightfully so. But James Harden is a dude. And the year he's having, I mean, you know, it took a historic season from Russell Westbrook to deny him last year. I just don't think they'll let that happen again.
But he literally basically said that. That's what we're talking about. He basically, this is what happened. Go ahead, Rob. You're about to talk about this. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, and personally, I was more for James Harden winning it last year over Russell Westbrook as well. I know Westbrook had a phenomenal season last year, no question about that. But if I had the MVP vote last year, mine would have went to Harden last year, and definitely again this season when you look at the way the Rockets are playing as a team, the way he's playing individually. I mean, like I said, he's almost unguardable. He's even gotten better on the defensive end, and that was the knock on him, you know, for a good portion of his early career, was that he didn't put the effort in on the defensive end and the floor, and now he's doing that. You know, I'm not saying he's a first-team all-defender. I don't think he'll ever be that. But, you know, he's definitely gotten better on the defensive end. He's put more effort into the defensive end. And I think that has been a trickle-down effect on his team. And in one area, the team has gotten better this year, even though Mike D'Antoni is not known for defense. But they have put a lot more effort, and it started with James Harden on the defensive end. And like I said, from the offensive end, he's unguardable.
It's Chris Paul. Don't make no mistake about it. It's Chris Paul. Chris Paul is a dog defensively, and he's one of those guys, we talked about it, if he was taller, he could have more of an impact on the game. But he's still fantastic at 6 foot, but like I said, the last one to be that size and go win a title as the undisputed leader, I think it's Isaiah Thomas with the Pistons. But Chris Paul, don't make no mistake about it, it's his presence there talking about defense and holding them accountable, and his quest to finally get to just a Western Conference Finals, let alone an NBA Finals, holding everybody accountable on that end of the floor, I think is the difference in them playing better defense this year.
Yeah, great call.
Agree with you. All right, gentlemen. So, again, we talk about LeBron James again, and I guess as he close to passing Michael Jordan as the GOAT, the greatest of all time, we all grew up in the Jordan era, and as much as I'm a fan of, you know, what LeBron is, kind of, you know, again, changing the game, I don't think we can, until this purpose, I don't think we can ever put – I still think Michael is always one up there. That's just me. And, again, I have that book, you know, 11 Rings, which talks about Phil Jackson and the whole behind the scenes of how he was, you know, grooming Michael Jordan and just his will to be kind of leader of that squad definitely helped get the team to where they've been. So to me, he's always been up there. I mean, his will, his competitiveness. And yes, he needed to have help. He needed to have Scotty, because without Scotty, I don't think he was there. But just the way he was able to mold that team and kind of take different roles and just prepare himself, he was on a whole other level, man. So, and again, I think because if there's no Michael, I don't think we have that type of, you know, player to compare, because he's had so many players that try to emulate him, from Kobe to, you know, and obviously I'm not saying that James is going to be like Jordan, because he's not exactly like Jordan. He's more Oscar Robinson, Magic, whatever you want to call it. But still, I think Michael is just kind of in his own stratosphere. And you talk about, you know, shoes, culture, it's all about Jordan, and that's right. Kind of where it is in my book, too. So go ahead, JQ, your thoughts.
Yeah, and I echo that, and I just take it one step further. I think this argument of people that, you know, nothing taken away from LeBron James, nothing taken away from LeBron James on the court and, more importantly, off the court in the community as well. But I personally, Jaquan Jenkins, think this is a no-win for him. I just think he's fighting a losing battle. If you talk about people like us that grew up in that era, older generation that kind of shape this argument and are louder than most other people, because like, hey, I was here when we saw him play every Saturday or Tuesday, or whatever, on TNT and NBC. Like, you're not gonna win those people over with LeBron, because they already have their mindset on him that he's too diva-ish, he's too this, he's too that. And unless he can't just get to six rings. He has to get to seven. He has to go past them. I still think if he gets to six rings, which a lot of people use fair or unfair in terms of judging who's the GOAT between the two of them, even if he ties Michael, everything that Michael has done, you feel like Coach, like you said, in a time where it just was the talent met the circumstance and it just exploded, kind of like with Tiger Woods with golf. Like, it's just going to be hard to kind of recreate that magic, I think. So I don't think he's ever really going to be able to win people over. I just don't. I mean, he's got to be above him in points, rebounds, assists, and most importantly, it has to be titles. So you're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt over LeBron James, over Michael Jordan, if he doesn't get more titles than Michael Jordan. He can't tie him. He's got to get to seven.
Rob?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, and this is another Shannon Sharp-led topic, by the way, when we come to the greatest of all time competition here. And Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything that you all have said. I can, I definitely would put Jordan still number one on my list as the greatest basketball player of all time. I'm not saying that because he's a Tar Heel, and obviously
that's exactly
why
I'm saying it.
Yes, it was just more to. Not only was he a great player, a great scorer, but the will to win. He did have great teammates, and for the most part, Jordan has been on better teams than Jordan has, and he's been with better coaches for sure than LeBron has had throughout his career. But sometimes that's just the way it's set up for you. And but like I said, Jordan's will to win, the 6 championships, leading the league in scoring, being defensive player of the year, things of that nature. I could see the argument for LeBron James. I really can, because he probably impacts the game in a lot more areas than Jordan did. When you look at, for every area of the game that he impacts the game in more areas than Jordan did. So I can see why people are making the comparison. But I still think that the championship still hold a lot of weight, fair or unfair. Mm-hmm. The championship still holds a lot of weight in that regards. And for me, it's about being the best player on the championship team too. It's not about how many championships you win, but it's about how many championships did you win and how many championships did you win as the best player on that team. And Jordan, for all 6 of those championships, was clearly the best player on his team. So, and LeBron would have to do the same thing to be in that boat. I would slightly disagree with the fact that if he wins 6, I think if he does get to 6 somehow and he's the best player on all 6 of those teams, you can make a case that he's better than Jordan. And the reason being, you go by the number of finals that he's been to, and then when you look at the area, how many areas that he impacts in the game. He impacts the game in so many more areas than Michael Jordan does. But for now, until we can actually, and I don't think LeBron's going to get the 6 championships, by the way. I really don't. So I don't think he'll ever catch Jordan. But that's what
it
would take
about
to surpass him.
This is why I say that. When you're the challenger and you're trying to unseed the champion, you can't try to beat him on a draw. You can't get it on the tie. You have to beat him in that. And like you said, we both said fair or unfair, that ring discussion is going to keep coming up because he's been to so many finals, and right now he's 3-5, I believe, in the finals. So, like you said, he's facing good teams as well. Golden State has ruined his chance at getting to 6. They just absolutely ruined it because he really could be at 5 if you didn't have to deal with Golden State. And now it's a whole different argument of can he get 2 more in the next 5 or 6 years. But I'm just me personally, in order to beat a man, you got to beat the man. You can't tie the man. And I think a lot of people feel like that.
Matter of fact, if he gets to 6 and he's the best, I don't think it's a tie. I think LeBron will be clearly ahead of him because of the number of finals that he gets to and how many area he impacts. He's going to break all of Michael Jordan's records, and he's already started to break a lot of them already. So it wouldn't even be a tie if he was to get the 6 championships as the best. He would be a tie only in championships, but he would not be a tie in no other category. He would be ahead of Jordan in every other category possible.
But you know what? Those championships are weighted. You're taking them all as being on the same wavelength. So we tied in this category. This ain't fantasy basketball. We tied in this category, but I win these other ones, so I went on categories 1. That's not how this is going to work. The championships are way more weighted and way more tilted. And I say it fair or unfair, and I agree with you on that point. I'm just saying a tie in terms of championships, that's the number one criteria in a lot of people's minds, and it's heavily weighted. So I hear what you're saying statistic-wise. But if he doesn't get more championship rings, if he only finishes with maybe say he gets 1 more and he does everything you say he does in real life, he should win that argument, even at 4, if he beats him in every other statistical category. But we know that's not going to be the case. That's why I say even if he gets to 6, it's not going to be enough. He's got to get to 7.
I will agree to disagree on that topic.
Fair enough.
This fellas,
I personally believe if he does get to 6 and he's the best, I'm not saying if he wins 2 as like the third or fourth option on his team, then that doesn't count in my book. He's got to get the best player on all 6 teams to be mentioned in the same breath. And you can't do it as the second or third option. I personally don't think he's going to get to 6 just by the way that things are set up with the team that he's on.
Mm-hmm.
in the way the rest of the league. But but if somehow that he did, I think you would have to put him number one just because of how many times he's gone to the finals. And when you look at the standpoint of you've never had a player in NBA history to lead the NBA finals in points, assists, rebounds, steals, and blocks, that is unheard of. You haven't had anybody do that in NBA history. Me, it wouldn't even be a tie. He would win.
We agree to disagree
on that one.
Yeah, we agree to disagree.
I'm just going to say this. I mean, you know, the stats are great, but I'm just looking at Michael Jordan just from the impact, I mean, of the game. I mean, both on and off the court, guys. I mean, Jordan has done so much. That's why I said, you know, Jays to, like, culture, songs, you know, everything about Jordan, it's bigger than the game. And that's the type of impact, I mean, globally. I mean, you know, and Jordan.
You don't think LeBron has had the same impact?
I said that. I said that he's global too, but I'm saying he's like Jordan was the first, kind of like, and whether you say as far as the time, but, I mean, everybody, unless you're living under a rock, you know, it's said that, yeah, everyone knows LeBron and Jordan, but he was kind of the first. I mean, just everything culturally, just the way that his teams were set up, that season, the 62, whenever they went 62-10, well, I mean, whenever they lost seven games, I mean, everything about that squad was just the three-piece. It's just a lot. He goes and plays baseball, comes back, still is able to reestablish that, you know. And like I said, I wish we could have some more time to really, you know, talk about that 11 Rings book because it's so deep. And the way that he associates, I know it's talking about Zen stuff, which is very interesting too, but it talks about, you know, having the tribe and the tribe of each squad. And Phil Jackson's describing, hey, you know, you got this first tribe of like the gang mentality. You got the second tribe where the world is, you know, against me. Then you got the third tribe where it's all about me. Fourth tribe is when it's about we are greater than you. And then the fifth tribe is like the joy of playing basketball. It's the joy. And you know, it talks about how each team is in that stage, and then if you get to that fifth stage, that's like utopia. He's like, the Bulls are at the stage. He's like, it's the only team that's at that stage. And I know it's just kind of like I'm trying to give snippets, but you look at teams now, and that's why I said chemistry. You know, that's why a team like the OKC Thunder will never be that, because they're all about Russell Westbrook. So he's about me. He's not about we as a team, and you can see that. And it's little things like that as far as the way that Jordan was able to literally take a squad and just kind of formulate them. He realizes he was coachable. He's like, hey, this offense is not going to work for me, but if you give me the triangle offense and I can see how it benefits, you know, me, I can do some things with that. You got to be coachable, right? You can't be like, nah, I ain't going to do that. Nah, you know, I'm going to be a leader now. I'm going to change the way that I'm playing the game. I'm going to adapt. I'm going to have a Luke Longley come in and be a shooter. Steve Kerr making big shots. Jim Paxson. That takes more than just, you know, whatever, getting 50,000 shots. So you have to know how to adapt and just include your teammates. I mean, it was amazing to me. So that's why I'm saying the impact of the game is more than just, you know, what Jordan has done. It's just freaking – I still remember freaking that, you know, I Believe I Can Fly. I had that freaking on VHS, man. I still put that in. It's like crazy, man. It's nuts. So,
and not to take anything away from Michael Jordan, obviously – as you know, as we all agree, he's definitely and clearly the best player of all time in NBA history. But it also helps that he had a coach like Phil Jackson too to help him get to that level too. And so you have to consider those things too.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I went a little tangent. I apologize. Can the Rockets beat the Warriors in a 7-game series, Rob?
If both teams are healthy, no. Absolutely. And I still don't, even with them being the number one seed in the Western Conference, I mean, the Warriors are just a juggernaut, man. I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, if this Warriors team is healthy, I mean, this team has a chance to be probably one of the best NBA teams in the last 30 years. And, I mean, as far as the run that they can go on here for the next few years, if they're healthy, obviously. I mean, there's a little bit of a question mark with Steph Curry right now with the MCL sprain, and it looked like he might miss the first round of the playoffs. We don't know how much, you know, if it's going to affect him going forward after that. But if they're healthy, I mean, there's not a team in the league that can beat them. I mean, you arguably got two of the top three players or at least two of the top five players in the world on one team, And then you got two of the all-stars in Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. If they're healthy, I just can't see the Rockets or anybody beating that team if they're healthy. It's going to take for at least one of those star players to be out, and I would give the Rockets a chance if that's the case.
Yep. Oh, man. I went back and forth with this one because of what you just said in terms of even despite being in the one seed. But the thing about it, you talk about in the seven-game series, if it goes to game seven, that game seven is in Houston and not in the Bay, which is almost impossible to do to win in that stadium with that team in a game seven with the team that they have. But in all fairness, this is why I'm going to go back and say to Ralph's point of no, is that if I'm going to kill Toronto – for everything that they've done in the playoffs or not done in the playoffs with DeRozan and Lowry, then I have to hold James Harden to the same standard in the Western Conference Finals of playoffs where he has not been up to snuff, in my opinion, for what he's done in the regular season in terms of taking that into the postseason. So that being the case, until I see him do it and them knock off that team, I can't say that they will be done in the seven-game series. For everything that Rob just said, that Warriors team is on a whole other level. They are denying LeBron another place in his legacy in the NBA because they're that good. You know what I mean? Like, they are doing it. He could really be at five, if we want to be honest. You say, yeah, they blew it against Dallas. They blew it against San Antonio. Well, not San Antonio, because San Antonio in its own right was a dynasty. But if Golden State is not that good and everything that he did, he could be at five. And that conversation we just had takes on a whole different tenor of, oh, well, he could really get to seven. He's already at five. If you don't have a Golden State out there looming now looking year in, year out. So, I just can't say that. Until I see Harden do it, I can't say that until I see it.
JQ being fair and consistent.
Hey, man, I try.
Fair and consistent is the word
of
the day.
You got to think about it, too. James Harden, game seven of the playoffs last year, was nowhere to have, even after that great season, was nowhere to be found in game seven of that series last year.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Blown out.
Yeah, that's gonna always haunt him. That's going to always haunt him. All right, let's recap the Cavs and the Raptors. You want to take that, JQ? You're going to pass it to Rob. It's your call, bro.
Well, again, it's just the LeBron, and he just has a wizardry over Toronto, especially in Cleveland. They're trying to get healthy. Hood is still a little banged up with the ankle. But in Cleveland, Toronto cannot beat Cleveland. But to their credit, having played such a really good regular season, they have that ability, like I talk about, if he goes to a game seven, a game seven in Toronto, and not that they can't go to Toronto and win, but it's a lot harder to win on the road against the one seed in their home stadium as opposed to being home in Cleveland at Quicken. So, I mean, but still something to put doubt in Toronto's mind that they beat them twice now, I think in the past week and a half it is, that Cleveland has beat them in Cleveland. So it puts doubt into Toronto's mind that you're still the little brother in this situation, and we could turn it on, and we still got him, and we can beat you. So, I mean, that's what I take away from that recap. If you could take away anything from a regular season game, is that that coupled with the winning a week and a half ago, I think that, they'll never say it, but it plants a little seed of doubt of, oh, my God, here we go again. We've done everything we could do. We've bolstered our bench. We're shooting phenomenal. We've got the best record in the East, and we still can't win in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Rob. JQ set that up perfectly because I was thinking about that. How does this affect the Raptors going into the playoffs? I mean, psychologically, are they able to kind of like, beat Big Brother, if you will, as JQ said, because we talked about how great they've looked, but now – proof's in the pudding. So what does that recap say? I mean, you took exactly what I was thinking about that, JQ. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I totally agree. And for me, if you're the Raptors, this is a game you definitely wanted to win tonight. As JQ mentioned, from a psychological standpoint, even though it was a road game at Cleveland, I think from a confidence standpoint, this is a game I think if you're Toronto, you had to win tonight. You had to go on the road to find a way to beat Cleveland, but Cleveland took care of business at home, 112-106. Everybody in Cleveland's starting lineup had double figures tonight. LeBron James, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. Kevin Love, the fifth option on the Cavs team, according to Andre, 18 points, 15 rebounds. Jose Calderon even had 19 points. Rodney Hood, 17. Jeff Green, 12. Larry Nance Jr. only played 16 minutes, 6 points. Tristan Thompson only 14 minutes as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they shape up their rotation. come playoff time. But I mean, obviously, there was a point this season that I clearly doubted the fact that if Cleveland can make it back to the NBA Finals. And I'm kind of now getting back on that bandwagon, thinking they might be the team to beat the Eastern Conference again. As strange as that sounds, without Kyrie Irving, after all the lineup struggles and trades and things of that nature, and, you know, Boston not having, you know, a healthy Kyrie Irving, so it should be, even though he may be back in time for that portion of the playoffs if they were to see the Celtics. But, yeah, you can't rule out the Cleveland Cavs and LeBron James again going into these playoffs. It's the second straight game they've beaten the Raptors after the Raptors blew them out by about 30-something in one game early this year. But it's two in a row Cleveland has beat the Raptors, and it's been close to LeBron James time in the playoffs.
Right, and not just the two in a row. That is so close together, right, is my thing. If you had played them in late February and then played them in late March, but it was two games in a row in Cleveland where you have 5 to 6 weeks between them, you could probably overcome that. But when you do it two times in a week and a half, and it's the last final home kick going into the postseason, that to me puts a little bit more on Toronto, like, man, you know. And listen, Toronto's still playing. You know, Boston's on their heels for that one season in the East. So it's not like it's a foregone conclusion right now. So they need those wins, not only psychologically against Cleveland, but just in the standings to get the one seed. To come up empty twice in, you know, 8 to 10 days is a tough pill. And then they got to play Boston twice. They got this three-game stretch where they play Boston, Cleveland, I think Boston. So you're going to find a lot out about Toronto. And if they go 0-3, how do they bounce back?
Yep. Good call. All right, gentlemen, we got about 8 minutes here. Let's kick off those fantasy shout-outs, Rob.
All right, we just ended the fantasy basketball season. So shout-out to Chester in New Orleans, who wins the championship. Actually beat me in the championships for the week 5-3. I kind of made it a little bit respectable there at the end, but he got off to a great start. He had like 8-0 and 7-1 for most of the week. So congratulations, and sorry for me drawing a blank on the name of his team. Was it Turned Up?
I can read that real quick because I was Past the Rock. Yep,
Past the Rock.
Yep.
Past the Rock. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. So Chester, Past the Rock. Congrats. And I'll make sure I had to send him out a personal message to congratulate him on winning our fantasy basketball. All of our fantasy
Congrats,
teams this year, the number one seed did not win with football and basketball. So no number one seeds won any of our championships. And in Chester's case, Pastor Rock, he was a sixth seed and came up in and won the championship as number six seed. So congrats.
I'll try to beat him, man.
Chester's team, Pastor Rock. I'm sorry, what did you say, Dre?
I was trying to beat him, man, for that wacky tie, man. Just kind of like still kicks, man. Still hurts me, man. Because I felt I was coming for JQ, man, but I didn't want to overstep my bounds. So I'm a little upset about that, man. But it's all good. Yeah, I know.
That's the crazy thing. We got to give him a ton of love. He knocked off all three of us
we
in the
do.
Playoffs to win.
We do. I am not being a loser by any means. I was just saying, I was like, just crap. I just wish it was more defined as opposed to so close. But, you know, it is what it is. I will say congrats, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Shout out to JQ. JQ won our bracket challenge for the NCAA tournament. Definitely congrats on that. We're going to get into last night's game here talk about Villanova.
I can't take no credit for that. That was my only Final Four team. They happened to win it, and that's the only reason why I won. It's rolling with them.
They were my only Final Four team too, but I had them losing in the semifinal round.
That's the only difference because my bracket was trash. I own it.
So, gentlemen, as we kind of transition, so speaking of that. Did college basketball win last night, JQ? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I mean, it's a mixed bag because if you look at the TV ratings, they won the night in terms of the ratings, but I believe it was the lowest title game, I think, ever, or at least here in the recent history, and partly because it got to be a blowout towards the end. But I just think that, you know, while you have Villanova and Michigan are definitely – you know, Villanova definitely in basketball. Michigan, just as much as I hate them, they're a big college name. I just don't think their rosters and the story translated across America to the point. For the diehard college fans that watch it and the people that hate Michigan like me, yeah, they absolutely won. I mean, what happened with Villanova in that shooting and what they did, we'll talk about it a little later. It was just phenomenal to watch. But in terms of, you know, coast to coast, it's hard to say they won when you have the lowest rated championship game that you've had in a long time, if not ever.
Yeah.
Rob.
And I even actually I meant to include this as a topic, and somehow it just slipped my brain. But this is the women's college basketball game growing more than the men's college basketball game right now. That was actually supposed to be one of my topics on the show, but since I forgot to include it, I'll just talk about that briefly. Obviously, I don't know if women's college basketball will ever be as big as men's college basketball. But the women's college basketball game is growing at a higher rate than the men's college basketball game. Now, you can go back maybe 20 years ago, and in a lot of cases, college basketball was more popular than the NBA. But that is not the case today. The college basketball game has gone down tremendously. I don't know if it's because of the one and done. You know, you don't get to see guys.
That's exactly what it is.
You don't get to see guys for 4 years at the major institutions. They used to back in the day. But, I mean, you can recall, hey, in the 80s and 90s, maybe even 10, 15 years ago, the college game was just as big as the NBA game, or if not bigger. But right now the NBA is a league that's ascending right now in growth and popularity, and college basketball is not. And like I said, the women's game, I mean, the women's Final Four was just phenomenal. Two games both went to overtime, and the championship game was another buzzer-beating shot. But the women's game, I don't think will ever be as big as the men's game, but their game is growing more than the men's game is right now, unfortunately. That being said, the people who are not following college basketball missed out on a phenomenal team with Villanova. I mean, that team was a bunch of dogs. And I mean, they just was they just had a bunch of dudes on that team that were just flat out gamers, and they for the most part was the best team in college basketball all season. I mean, they won every game in this tournament by at least 12 to 25, 30 points. I think it's like the largest margins of victory in tournament history for a championship team, and a phenomenal performance by Villanova. And in my mind, this is one of the best college NCAA tournament runs that I've seen in a long time from any team. And they're going to be around. I mean, obviously they got a few guys they're probably going to lose here in this draft. They got another five-star recruit coming in next year. And Jay Wright has done a phenomenal job recruiting and building a program, having a mix of veterans and young guys on this team. Second one in 3 years. So this team is not going anywhere. This Villanova program is going to be around for at least another 5 to 10 years as far as being a championship contender.
All right, hey, so real quick, before you hold that thought, Jake here, hold on real quick. We've got two minutes here. Let's kick the OT and let Rob do his thing, then we'll continue on your thought, and we'll go from there. Go ahead, Rob.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to go to our OT portion of the show. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of the show live, so click on the same link on tomorrow. We still have some more college basketball. We still got more to talk about from the game last night and a little bit of college basketball. We still have some NFL to talk about. NFL draft, we got some things happening in the NFL. Brandon Cooks being traded to the Rams. We'll get to talk about the Rams a little bit here, too. So for our football and college basketball fans, stay tuned. We still got more to talk about here. Click on the same link on tomorrow. You get to hear the rest of what we have to say about college basketball and the NFL. And then next week, we're going to attempt to do Wednesday night again on next week. next week, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central. We apologize. A couple of weeks in a row we've changed over to Tuesday. But we think we'll be back to our normal night on Wednesday on next week, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central. You don't want to miss it. We're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. We're getting closer and closer to the NBA playoffs. So we got a lot to talk about here in the sports world here in the next few weeks. Major League Baseball, opening week, too. Lots to talk about, people. Good night.
Yeah, and I just want to say I appreciate y'all, Major League Baseball. How you going to give us the Nationals and the Cubs to start the first two series of the season? Come on, man. We're trying to get out to a good start in Cincinnati. You going to put us behind the eight ball like that? That's just dirty pool. I appreciate y'all for listening to the show and downloading the link out for the OT portion. I'll at you next week.
You got to play him at some point, JQ. Why not find out which kind of team you have early?
Man, you ain't got to start us. You ain't got to start us off like that, man. You ain't got to do us like that.
How do we
like,
mess
God,
up Cincinnati? How do we mess them up? Oh, Cubs and Nationals. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's give them the preemptive favorites in the National League to start the season. Let's just go ahead and do that.
Ooh, James Harden, 38-10-9 tonight.
Yeah, I agree with Rob, though. You know what you got coming out the gate. All right.
Yeah, man, I guess
we
so.
We love this. All right, gentlemen. I'm really excited to know about this because there's two guys I'd like to ask Rob about, too. Because, again, obviously Dante DiVincenzo came out of nowhere. I mean, not out of nowhere, but just what a phenomenal game from him. And right now, I guess the question is, does he have more – NBA ability than Trae Young, which is, I mean, I don't know consistency wise, but you know, because obviously Trae Young is, you know, kind of had a little arc. You know, he's only a sophomore, but I guess tell me about him, because granted, you thought what's his name, Mo Wagner, was going to do some things he didn't do, Jack, and it could have been the fact that they were tired from the game at Michigan. But talk about his performance, Rob. And then also if he has more NBA ability, and we're going to kick it off to JQ because, you know, as a Hawks fan, you know, I don't know where he's at, you know, if he's coming out, you know, I mean, probably, but, you know, again, your thoughts about him. And on a second side note, I'd love to hear about Luka Doncic as well, too. So that's just, you know, I'm being selfish here. So go ahead, you know, Rob, on that point.
Well, DiVincenzo obviously was, you know, when he came into that game last night, I mean, I want to say Michigan was up 14-8 when he entered the game. And man, Villanova, when he came and hit the floor, man, it was all she wrote. Villanova went on the run. He had 18 points before halftime. A phenomenal performance. I think he ended up with either 31 or 28. I can't remember, but
31.
A phenomenal 31. Performance. 31. And that incredible block he had on defense too. I think he was getting more attention for that than all the threes he hit. But a phenomenal performance. You're talking about a guy who's been the sixth man for Villanova this year. And, I think he only had 10 starts this season to fill in for when they've had players been injured and things of that nature. I, at the moment, have Trae Young as a better NBA prospect because of his ball handling ability, his shooting ability, his quickness. DiVincenzo, at the moment, his game doesn't translate to the NBA that well from an athletic ability standpoint, even though that block will tell you otherwise. But I think another year of college basketball, his stock could really go up. And I would, you know, hate that he would make the rash decision to go to the NBA based on his performance last night. I mean, the college game is completely different than the NBA game. And so the type of performance he had last night was better set up for him on the college level than it would be on the NBA level. So I do think he can use some more schooling and come back to school. Like I said, I would hate for him to make the rash decision because he would not get picked before Trae Young if he was to come out right now. Trae Young will be a top 10 pick. Right now I have him in that 8 to 10 kind of window on the lower end of the top 10. But right now he's going to be a top 10 pick, and DiVincenzo wouldn't get picked that high. But that was one of the better national championship performances that I've seen in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And just quickly, I was out watching it with a buddy of mine, and there was a dude behind me who from Michigan. So, of course, I was eating all that up, and he was like, who is this guy? And I was, my buddy was like, man, that's Dante DiVincenzo. If you didn't know him before, you're going to know him now. And that was the kind of performance that he just put on. But he's been doing this for Villanova this year, but he's been in that six-man role. But he's a flat-out stud, and he's got a ton of moxie, as you can see, you know, winking at the crowd and whatnot after he got rolling that block to – not only block it with one hand, but to try to knock it free with the other hand. Just to think about that, trying to do that, and the athletic ability to do it, it was phenomenal. But all that being said, I'm with you totally. To me, it's like Trae Young could be a poor man's Steph Curry, where DiVincenzo could be J.J. Redick 2.0. And you still take a poor man, Steph Curry, over J.J. Redick 2.0. I mean, I'm just saying, if I'm looking at that, I think he's got a good, you know, Dante can shoot the three well enough to carve a niche for himself. He's going to be gritty and all that good stuff. J.J. was like that as well. Don't forget that. Like, he was hard-nosed, but he didn't have all the athletic ability to make it translate to become a superstar. But he's going to carve out a nice 10, 12, 13-year career in the NBA as a marksman. And I think you could see Dante doing that with maybe a little bit more upside. That's why I call him 2.0. So he's a little better. Mm-hmm. But it's still Trae Young. He just has, you know, talent just oozing out of his eardrums. And I just can't see it. If he even came out, he wouldn't even be cracked a lottery, I mean, even based off what he did last night. I just don't see that happening. I think Trae Young is the better NBA prospect.
Yeah. And we got to keep in mind, he's coming off the bench for a reason.
he's
been phenomenal,
right.
But he's been the 6th.
They got a lot of talent, bro. They got a lot of talent. Don't
like I said,
say
I think
too.
His stock. Yeah. I think he has potential for his stock to rise with another year's coming back. Obviously, Mikal Bridges is going to go pro. He's their lottery pick on their team. It would be completely a shock if he come back for a senior year. So that's a spot that's going to be open, and for sure. On that team, but I think another year of development. I mean, he is 6'5", so he's got some size on him too. Another year of college, I think he has the potential for stock to rise from an NBA standpoint.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Maybe.
Brunson, I can tell you before this season, even though Jalen Brunson is the National Player of the Year in college basketball, before this season, he was not even considered a first-round pick. And now Jalen Brunson has kind of gotten into that latter part of the first round conversation. Even Jalen is very smart. His game is smooth, but he doesn't have the athletic ability that translates to the NBA. And that's why, you know, for the most part, he was never considered a first round. He's considered an NBA player, but just not a first round pick. But now he's in that conversation of being a late first round pick, Jalen Brunson. But he won't be a lottery pick. But, you know, sometimes you're just a great college player, and Jalen Brunson is that as well. But like I said, even prior to the season, he wasn't even in conversation for a first round or more of a second round pick. But he's moved into that 20 to 25 range when it comes to the NBA draft.
Well, I'll let you finish it off, Dre. I was just going to say, the flip side of that is, you're right, he could improve his stock by coming back another year. But, man, there's something to be said for striking while the iron is hot. His stock may not get any higher than it is right now. I mean, he is the talk of the nation who watches college basketball. But, bro, you got to delete those old tweets. I don't know if y'all saw his tweets from high school. They were suspect at best. So I don't know what kind of, you know, that's high school, so we all do stupid stuff in high school. But, man, they super suspect. I'm not going to repeat them on the show, but, yeah, just anybody that's interested, go ahead and Google it. They out there, and you'll say, ooh, come on, man.
Yeah. I'll say that, too, just to kind of, like, wrap this topic up, too, the fact of the matter about the DiVincenzo is just more or less you know, I'm not a fan of anyone that's been a six-man getting to the NBA, man. It brings back memories of Marvin Williams. You got to be a star.
I will say Marvin Williams never had that kind of production at North Carolina. Even though he won a national championship, he only played 1 year, and he never had a game like DiVincenzo had last night.
I'll give that to you, too, but I want no part of a six man ever again. I need to be starting.
Yeah, I knew you were going with that.
Oh man, I'm still upset about that. All right, Jay Wright, guys, is he one of the elite? This is an easy yes for me because he's joined company with Mike Krzyzewski and who's the other coach that won like the three championships? Or excuse me.
Roy Williams.
Something like that? I think, yeah, Roy Williams, yeah. So, he's in that company. Go ahead. Thanks, Rob. Finish that up.
Yeah, I mean, Coach K has 5 national championships. Roy Williams has 3. And now Jay Wright has 2. They're the only 3 active college basketball coaches with multiple national championships.
Yep.
And John Calipari doesn't have multiple. Jim Boeheim doesn't have multiple.
Tom Izzo doesn't
have multiple.
Wow.
And what other, you know, great college basketball? Any other one we want to throw in there? Those are just 3 off the top of my head. But Bill Self doesn't have multiple national championships. And, you know, Kansas seemed to be, you know, a threat for running for Final Four almost every year. And so just think about that from that perspective, what he's been able to do. And, I mean, two and 3 years at that, too. I mean, you got a lot of people forget. Last year's tournament, Villanova was the number one overall seed. They got upset in the second round, but they were the number one overall. So, I mean, Villanova's on quite a run right now. And I saw something as far as this is the greatest five-year run for any college basketball team since going back to the UCLA days. So what Villanova is doing right now, this was better than that 99-04 run by Duke, the five-year run that Villanova is on when it comes to wins and national championships and things of that nature. So this is a phenomenal run that they're on. And what he's done, he's built a program. And, I mean, he's found his niche with the type of players he's going to go out and recruit. And, I mean, he's getting some, I mean, Amari Spellman. Who's a redshirt freshman from Cleveland, who I think another guy that could improve his draft stock by coming back to school. And so we'll see what decision he makes. But he's a five-star guy. They got a good recruiting class coming in next year. I know they have one five-star and maybe a couple of four-star players. So I think they got three players. But just one five-star, and what Jay Wright is doing is he's coaching these guys up. And I think what you're starting to see here of late is you got to have a mix. You know, if you're going to have a recruiting class, it doesn't seem like the recruiting 4 and 5 1-and-done players is going to work anymore. You got to have maybe one of those guys and a bunch of other 4-star guys and coach them up, and so you can have some kind of consistency in your program going forward. I mean, Jalen Brunson. I can't remember if he was a 5 or 4 guy, but, you know, he's a guy that's been with them for both of these national championships. Mikael Bridges was not a 5-star recruit, but now he's going to be a lottery pick. Spellman was a 5-star pick, but 5-star recruit, but he doesn't seem like the one-and-done type player, though. To me, he still could use, you know, another season or so. So I think he's finding his niche of players and putting that blend together. And I hear his practices, some of the most precise practices of any college basketball team, too, just for some insiders. So, I mean, and they're not going away. Like I said, you know you're going to lose Mikael Bridges. Some of these guys are going to be back from this championship team, and he's got another good recruiting class coming in. So they're not going away, and they're going to be the favorites to win the Big East again. Villanova just lost their head coach to Louisville. And I mean, they're going to be the clear favorites in the Big East yet again, and they'll be competing, I think, for a top five ranking going into next season as well.
Yeah, they'll be moving Chris Mack to Louisville. Yeah, and not so much to add to that because you summed it up. You know, I mean, you got 2 titles in 3 years. You've joined that echelon. That's hard to do, and it takes more than just luck. And that man's suit game is immaculate. You just got to – that dude is on fire with everything he has happening. So, I'm not going to regurgitate.
You're almost in my league,
Easy. So, I'm not going to regurgitate too much for what Rob said. I mean, yeah, you got to give Jay Wright a ton of credit for what he has happening, for everything that Rob just said. And he definitely has put himself up in that upper echelon. And it doesn't look like he's slowing down.
Yeah. You know, the question is, does he stay at Villanova? Oh, does the NBA team come calling? That'll be interesting going forward.
He's staying. Probably staying.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's about the right fit. Now, he just seems to be that right fit at Villanova. So, I mean, when you got that train rolling like that, I would think twice about leaving.
That green grass is not always greener.
Nope.
All right, gentlemen. Let's switch gears to the NFL here. Hopefully we got about 15 minutes to wrap this up here. The Giants, do they control the NFL draft, JQ?
Yeah, I think I know where Rob got this from. I saw Colin talk about it. But me and Rob had talked about it in a text a couple weeks ago, and I would say yes from the standpoint of, you know, the Jets moved up to 3 to get a quarterback. So you're saying, okay, Cleveland's going to take 1 and 1. You don't know what the Giants are going to do. You feel like the Jets moving up are going to take 1 and 3. You know, Denver, I believe, is sitting there at 5, is probably going to take a quarterback. as well, because the Kingdom, I think, is just a bridge. So if you're the Giants and you're saying, okay, I know 1, 3, and 5, because, you know, Cleveland's going to take a quarterback either 1 or 4, but most likely at 1, then you've got the Giants sitting in a very nice position at 2 to say, okay, if you want to jump in front of a New York or a Denver, you got to come deal with us to get the guy that you want, you know, depending on who Cleveland doesn't take. If you're in love with 2 of them, you can make sure you get 1 of those 2. So, yeah, the Giants are in a good spot in that sense because they don't have enough, I don't think, to take Saquon Barkley or whatever. Like Colin said, I agree with things he says, to overtake the Eagles in that division this year. I think Philadelphia is just the class, and Dallas is going to challenge them the most. I don't think it would be the Giants, even with a Saquon Barkley, one of the quarterbacks, or Bradley Chubb. I just don't think that happens. So if you're the Giants and you're looking at, okay, this might be a 1 to 2 year, 2 to 3 year process of trying to get back to where Philadelphia is, then we need to accumulate some more assets. So I would agree. They are in a very good position now because the Jets made their number 2 pick so much more viable because the Jets moved up to 3.
Rob?
Yeah, I mean, right now the Giants are a wild card in this draft. As JQ mentioned, the Browns and the Jets are definitely taking quarterbacks at 1 and 3. So the Giants have quite a few options here. They have to ask themselves, hey, do we need multiple players? Do we want to go after a star player? Or do we want to draft our quarterback for the future here? So they have options here. You can trade down. Buffalo definitely wants to move up. Buffalo will probably give up both of their first-round picks to move up to number 2 to draft a quarterback. So Buffalo would love to trade with the New York Giants, and that's that's a very good chance that could possibly happen. So you could have the first 3 picks in this draft being quarterbacks with Buffalo moving up to that number 2 spot if that was to happen. So the Giants have to answer that question. Hey, will multiple players help us here, or do we take the quarterback of the future here, and you still could have the first 3 picks of the draft being quarterbacks? The Giants have to ask themselves that. Eli Manning, however you want to look at it, had probably the worst year of his NFL career. Can Pat Shurmur get him back to where he was 3 or 4 years ago, or is that what we're going to see from Eli Manning for the rest of his career? That being said, you still have to ask the question, how many more years does Eli Manning have left? And so do you go ahead while you have an opportunity? We don't know what the quarterback stock is going to look like next year. We don't know where the Giants are going to be drafting next year. And so that's a big question mark, too. Do you go ahead and draft a guy now that you think is going to be your future quarterback and may even have to be your quarterback this season? So that's another question the Giants have to answer. And then the next question the Giants have to ask themselves, do we go after a potential star player in Saquon Barkley or Bradley Chubb here at the number 2 spot? Do we feel like we have something right now if we add a star player to our mix where we can be competitive this season? So those are 3 questions the Giants have to ask themselves going into this draft. So it's going to be interesting. Right now, if they stay at number 2, I'm going to project that they're going to take the quarterback. And the only reason I would say that, if you have that opportunity when your quarterback is about 38, 39 years old, you can't pass up that opportunity. Running backs, I think Saquon Barkley has the potential to come in and be rookie of the year from an offensive standpoint. But how many years is he going to play in the league? And what's the long-term projection there as well? So you got to think about that too. So my projection at the moment, even though they can go a lot of ways, they can trade down with Buffalo, they can take Barkley, they can take Chubb, or they can take a quarterback, but I'm going to go with the quarterback for now.
Yeah, and just real fast, to throw on that, I haven't heard any chatter, but you know it always feels like that on draft day in the first round, it's a team that's been the quietest that makes moves. I feel like I have no intel here, but I'm not going to discount a Miami or Arizona saying, you know what, we really like one of those 3 guys, and we're willing to give our first this year and our first next year and maybe a couple 2s because we like that guy, and we're just keeping it real close to the vest, and we know that Buffalo is out there making all that chatter, but we're going to jump up and try to come through the back door and get there because I feel like that always happens where you have a team that jump up and say, oh, I need to go get that guy, but you just don't hear about it. You always have the teams that are out there saying it, and it's good for us to talk about. But there's always a team or two that sits right there and kind of like, you know, laying in the weeds, and they make a movie, and we come back on the show like, oh, my God, I can't believe Team X did this.
Yeah. That's a good point. I can definitely tell you that Miami has chatter moving up. I haven't heard much chatter out of the Cardinals moving up, but Miami, Miami is sold on Baker Mayfield, and so they have very high interest. And right now, I even have them get Baker Mayfield. Look, units they stand pat at 11, but they are very high on Baker Mayfield, and I think either if they think they can stand pat and get him. But they are definitely in the conversation for moving up in this draft as well. And like I said, they are extremely high on Baker Mayfield and possibly even somebody else from a quarterback position. So it looked like they are ready to move forward from Ryan Tannehill. I know they are extremely high on Baker Mayfield. We'll see about the Cardinals. Like I said, that's a good point about the Cardinals because you're not hearing much chatter on their front. And you definitely cannot rely on Sam Bradford. And they definitely need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting as well to see what they're going to do in the draft from a quarterback standpoint.
Yep. A lot of talk, fellas. Good stuff. The only thing I'm going to add to that is that the Giants do hold that, and I'm curious to see what's going to happen, too, because like you said, you guys laid out great scenarios, too, especially Rob, as far as, the dominoes are going to fall, too, because they may be doing that for somebody. Like Buffalo, I think, like you said, I'm keeping on that Buffalo situation very closely. Because I really don't think the Giants absolutely need a quarterback. They can. It's like a luxury. So they can kind of play their hand and say, all right, they have a couple players that we're targeting, get extra picks. They may be coming out pretty. They can still get the quarterback later on if they want. So they're in a very interesting scenario. Let's talk about the Patriots.
But the only reason I would think they still, the quarterback still got to be in the conversation. You go back to the days when the Colts, had that opportunity when they were number one and Peyton Manning coming off a neck injury and things of that nature, and you go ahead and draft Andrew Luck. I'm not going to say it's the exact same situation for the Giants because obviously Eli is not coming off a major injury, but he's coming off of a down season at the latter part of his career. It's just that you definitely have to ask yourself the question, do we feel like one of these guys is going to be a franchise quarterback? And if they feel like one of these guys is going to be a franchise quarterback, and if you're the Giants, you have to ask yourself, when are you going to have another opportunity to draft this high in the draft? You hope that you're not going to be drafting this high again. So you have to ask yourself that question. Do you go ahead and take that franchise quarterback now if you feel like one of these guys is a franchise quarterback? And to me, if you feel like one of these guys is a franchise quarterback, you have to go ahead and take him because it could set yourself up for success here for the next 15 years again if you're the New York Giants. We know there's some stud players in this draft. When you talk about Bradley Chubb, when you talk about Saquon Barkley, and I even throw Quentin Nelson even in there for a guard, those three guys arguably are the best three players in this draft. But if one of these guys is a franchise quarterback that could set you up for success for the next 15 years, if you're the Giants, you have to highly consider that with the way Eli Manning just came off of, the season he just came off of.
But you know what? He's right, though. Dre is right, though, because we don't know what they feel about Lamar Jackson. You could trade with Buffalo, one of those teams that go fall back into the early teams and still get Lamar Jackson and accumulate more picks if you believe that high on Lamar Jackson. So you're right. The Giants are a wild card. It could go either way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they have the second pick of the second round, too, which is, right now and according to my estimation, Lamar Jackson might still be available around that pick. So, or they can use that for leverage to trade back into the first round. And Mason Rudolph is starting to make some names, and in some estimations, some scouts even have put him above Lamar Jackson now.
That's crazy. Fair enough. Yep. All good. Hey, we're moving right along here, and we're talking about the Patriots. We're talking about them possibly trading Rob Gronkowski, and they ended up trading Brandon Cooks in just an amazing situation. I don't know if you're giving the Rams credit because it feels like the Rams are going all in. Like, they're like, this is my shot.
Yes.
Getting Sue, getting, Talib. They're kind of solidifying the deal. Now they're saying, hey, let's get some, Marcus Peters. And now they're going, all right, let's get our weapon for, for that dynamic offense. It's already dynamic, to Todd Gurley. And so, again, I don't think the Patriots are going to trade Gronkowski. I could be off, but they're still acquiring picks, so they're kind of replenishing the shutdown. So, again, interesting scenario. I'm just going to say no to that. I'll let you guys comment, and we'll talk about who should the Browns draft in the mock draft? So that's the next phase. So go ahead, Rob, on that perspective as well.
Yeah, just a quick note on the Rams. I mean, you just highlighted a lot of the moves that they made this offseason, either via free agency or via trade, a lot of the moves they've made. I tell you, on paper, you can easily make a case that they could be the favorite in the NFC going into next season when you look at their talent on paper. But it just seems like whenever you have a team that make all of these kind of moves, something just happens and they don't get to the championship.
Yeah.
You go back to the Redskins days with Daniel Snyder.
Redskins.
And I mean, on paper, you can easily make a case that, I mean, shucks, the Rams are setting themselves up for a Super Bowl run here next year. But I'm a little scared to pick them because of who we've seen in the past from teams that have made all these big moves like that. So it'll definitely be intriguing. There'll definitely be an interesting story, interesting team to watch next season, you know, with everything that they have done. But I can tell you one thing that they have not addressed, which scares me and is a little concerning if you're a Rams fan, is their offensive line. Andrew Whitworth's got to be about 80 years old there, left tackle. He had a really good year last year, and he's an LSU guy. Helped us win a national championship back in 2003. And but you know, JQ knows all about him too. But I think if that has to be the one concerning aspect, I mean, you do have Jared Goff, you have Todd Gurley, but you want to take care of that offensive line. And now you don't have a first nor a second round pick to do that. So it'll be interesting. To me, that's the only area where you can look at this team and say, might be a question mark. And it's a big question mark if you don't have a good offensive line. So we'll see if Andrew Whitworth can, you know, put off another great year, and even some of their interior positions need some reinforcing as well. So we'll see if they're able to get some steals in the draft. But they will definitely have to address that that offensive line here going forward if they're going to be successful. But from a defensive line standpoint, you know, obviously they should be good. In the secondary, they should be good. And they have the weapons on offense. It's just a matter of can they get the protection up front to protect their assets in Gurley and Goff, you know, going forward. So that would be intriguing. Now, getting back to the Patriots and Gronk, I think, you know, it's just Gronk being a diva, but I don't think the Patriots will trade him. I don't think he's going to retire. A lot of that's just a lot of talk. So I think you're going to see them. They're still going to be together next year. And obviously Brady, I know he wants that target. He's not going to have Cooks now either. So I definitely think Gronk is going to stay with the Patriots. But I mean, now the Patriots got two first-round picks, and they have a lot of picks in this draft, too. So it's going to be real intriguing what they're going to be doing here going forward. I know Bill Belichick would love to get his hands on Bradley Chubb. I mean, I don't know if he got enough ammunition with those two first-round picks to move up and all these additional picks. But I know he's very high on Bradley Chubb, just as a lot of teams are. And the Patriots need a ton of help on defense. And matter of fact, both of their first-round picks at the moment, I have them taking the defensive player here. I have them taking Harold Landry from Boston College, who's a guy that's ascending.
There it is.
A guy who's got a potential to be a great pass rusher in the NFL. He's ascending in his draft, and he may not be available at 23, but I have him going to New England at 23. And I haven't taken Maurice Hurst, defensive tackle from Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know if I got dropped away, so I don't know where we are.
Good, Rob.
Oh, we were just commenting on the Rams, and we was commenting on the Patriots for the most part.
Okay, so I would just start on the Rams here. I love what the Rams are doing. I hear what you're saying. It does kind of feel like that. Like whoever wins free agency normally doesn't win the regular season. But the reason why I love what they're doing, and we talked about this when Seattle had Russell Wilson on his rookie contract, they're maximizing the fact that they don't have to pay Jared Goff $20 million a year right now. So you can go get like the vets and front load those contracts to bring in those players and then, you know, kind of pay that bill off later. But you try to win a title in that time frame. So it's an excellent plan. And I think they're on the way to it. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I don't know what's going on with New England, and I'm trading off. I think they're trying to prepare themselves for the future. And that's why I could see leading into the New England piece of this, I could see them trading Gronkowski. And you say, well, you can't trade Gronk. I mean, he is their primary weapon. He is their primary weapon. But if we know anything about Bill Belichick, and you got Rob talking about, oh, I don't know if I want to play this year. I might want to do movies. I want to do this and that. If he doesn't feel like Rob is 100% committed and he's already had all his injuries, he's not above selling a bet, you know, too soon rather than too late. We know that about Bill Belichick. Yep. He's done that. The proof is in the pudding. He will do that to you. If your name is not Tom Brady, you are expendable for the right price. So listen, if another one of those teams comes in and says, hey, you know, I feel like I got a shot at it. If I add Gronk to it and we'll give you this one and this two or whatever it is it takes to get Gronk, I could see them trading him. I'm not saying they're going to, but I could see them trading him because, I mean, they're acquiring assets. You see what's happening. They're acquiring assets. You can tell they're looking, they're positioning themselves for the rebuild while still trying to play, remain relevant. You say, maybe I get Edelman back so I can add him back to my core so I don't have that much loss, that sting, and maybe we use some of this draft capital to get some more, you know, weapons for Tom Brady because he's going to be Tom Brady and he's going to get these guys right. You know, it's a balancing act that they are well-versed in playing, so I can see them doing that.
Yeah.
All right.
And I think as it stands pat right now, if you look at the way the Patriots roster is constructed, right now they need defense, and more defense. And they are going to try to get a quarterback, I know for sure, here in the second or third round. It might surprise you and take one in the first round. But, you know, obviously they need a lot of defense. They need a quarterback for the future. And now they definitely need another wide receiver, another weapon on offense since they traded Brandon Cooks. But right now, as it's constructed, 23-30, I am going defense. Harold Landry, edge pass rusher from right there in Boston College. And Harold Landry may not even be there at 23. His guy is ascending in the draft. And then I have him taking Maurice Hurst at 30 from Michigan, defensive tackle. But we'll see. I won't be surprised if New England find a way to trade up, because I know Belichick would love to get Bradley Chubb.
Or you mess around and get Cortland Sutton.
Yep.
Big another wide receiver you can add to that. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, gentlemen, let's wrap this thing up here. I want to really quickly, JQ, let you, this is so painful. I want you to put on your GM hat for the Browns, if you care less. If you would, put yourself in a different body. Would you take Sam Darnold or Josh Allen? And then comment on the mock draft, and then we're going to let Rob do his comment and wrap up the mock draft and wrap up the show.
Well, you know, I struggle with this one, to honestly come up with it, because I'm not necessarily a believer in either one. And this is not a knock on Rob for putting this in the topics, because it's very topical, because this is what's being talked about in NFL circles in the top of the draft. But my problem is we have the last two Heisman Trophy winners not in this conversation, when one, although they say he's short, he's got the most accuracy of any of them, and he's a proven winner in Baker Mayfield. And you talk about just the sheer athleticism and the Heisman Trophy winner Lamar Jackson, and we're not even having this conversation at the top of the draft. To me, irks me, Jaquan Jenkins. I could be wrong. I'm not an NFL scout. I will say that on the air. And you know what? I'll take all of the criticism and the comments that people want to give to me. But for me, the fact that they're not even moving the needle to the point that these two guys are, given that they have hardware that they've won as the best player in college football and have, you know, attributes and stats that you could say are appealing to NFL teams, just boggles my brain. But if I'm the Browns and I'm being, you know, logical for the Browns, I slightly lean towards Darnold. You know, he had a good pro day out there in the rain. He's the one I think is the most pro ready of them, the ones they say are the most pro ready. I think he's the most pro ready. He's got those attributes to necessarily lead the team. I look at Josh Allen, and we get so infatuated with the arm strength, and we say that about Jeff George. We said that about Jamarcus Russell. They all went high, and they all busted. And then they want to compare him to Matt Stafford,
Carson
saying,
Wentz.
You know, he had the same. Yeah. Yeah, he's not that. You know, but the comparison you get, they try to boost him up, is Matt Stafford had a similar percentage completion rate at Georgia, and he had more talent. And you see what he's done in the NFL. And I get that. Well, I feel like for that one, you've got 3, 4, 5 that you could say, yeah, but what about this guy? So I'm going to go with Sam. He seems more even keel, more structured kind of pro offense there at USC. So if I'm Cleveland, I'm going to go with the one that seems to be the safest, air quotes, of the ones that we've talked about, and go with Darnold.
I'm going to let you do this, Rob. It's interesting because I am not a Darnold fan because I just think he has a Romo gene and there's something's not right, man. You know, you said you go and save picks. Sometimes you got to swing for the fences. I mean, I know they've been trying, and I get the problem why they're going
to
lean.
Cleveland can't afford to do that.
That is the thing. I know they can't. I'm just saying it sucks because you keep messing up and you keep messing up and you go for a safe pick and again, well, he's the most pro ready. And you don't know. Like you said, you said it eloquently. You got the freaking Heisman Trophy winner Baker Mayfield. He could be like Johnny Manziel, so now they're straight to him. You got Lamar Jackson. He could have been like RG3. So maybe you're not going to think about him. So let's get a safe pick again. And you know, Josh could be the better quarterback, but then it's a safe pick, you know. But I just don't – he looked terrible to me. He didn't look like he's like a Peyton Manning or like – you know what I'm saying? He didn't look like he was like dominating. Mm-hmm. So it just – I don't know. So it just – it's again, it's a safe pick, and here we go. You know, you missed out on a Wentz, man. So, again, you screwed it up again. So it's just one of the situations. So go ahead, Rob.
I think if you're the Cleveland Browns, this is the worst thing that could have. I mean, they have a lot of picks in this draft, 2 first-rounders, I think 3 second-rounders, and even, of course, quite a bit after that. But I think this is the worst thing that could have happened to the Cleveland Browns. I mean, there's a potential of 6 quarterbacks that can be picked in this first round this year. Right now I have 5 being taken in the first round, but there's a potential for 6 going in the first round in this draft. And I think if you do Cleveland Browns, it would have been better if there was just one clear-cut guy that's just the guy you have to take at number one. And now, with it being so many quarterbacks here that has the potential going in the first round, I mean, I think it's a safe bet that at least 2 of these guys are going to be bust. And I don't know which 2. They have to do a ton of homework to figure out which one of these guys they can't afford to miss. They cannot afford to miss on this number one pick. I mean, they have to do a ton of homework on this pick because, like I said, it would have been better for them if there was just one guy that just stood above everybody else and they're just going to go ahead and take that guy. So even if they missed on him, they were like, okay, well, he was a sure thing. They, you know, everybody thought he was a guy. But now, I mean, it's a safe – I mean, I don't know, but – I think it's a safe bet. At least 2 of these quarterbacks are going to be busted. It happens every year. Every year you draft, every year it has this many quarterbacks in the draft. You know, some of them are going to be studs, some of them are not. And maybe I could be wrong. They might all wind up being studs. But historically, when you have this many guys going the first round, there's at least a few of them that turn out to be busts. Or they don't live up to the billing. You may not be complete busts. But, you know, they don't live up to the billing of taking the teams to the top or to a championship and things of that nature. So this is really probably the worst scenario for Cleveland. But I'm going to – with that being said, to answer the question between Darnold or Josh Allen, I would have to get – and JQ is right, and Andre, you're right as well. They are questions about both of these guys. There are questions about Josh Rosen. There's questions about Baker Mayfield, too. And so there are questions about all of them. When you look at Sam Darnold, I mean, just look at last season. Look at the game against Ohio State. I mean, he looked flustered. He didn't play well. Most of last season, he didn't play as well as he did.
Clinical squad.
When you look at Josh Allen, the arm talent is tremendous. But when you look at his accuracy was not NFL caliber. But, you know, his arm talent is off the charts. Mm-hmm. And Josh Rosen, you look at him from a pure pocket passer, looks like the sharpest of any of them. But he doesn't seem to be motivated. So, you know, there's a question there. You know, will his head be in the game and things of that nature? So there's some questions about all of them. But when it comes down to it, I think when it comes down to Darnold and Allen, I think I would give the edge to Darnold from an accuracy standpoint. I think, you know, that's still the most important thing you're going to have to look at when you talk about from the quarterback position. And he's proven to be a little bit more of an – well, a lot more accurate than Josh Allen. And he does have some fluidness in the pocket. Not a scrambler or anything like that, but he can buy time in the pocket. He's showing you that he can do that as well. And he's been impressive in the interview room with the teams as well. So and he's come out and said that he wants to be the number one pick, and he wants to be the guy to turn Cleveland around. So he's saying the right things, and I think that's the reason why Josh Rosen is not being considered for number one, because he's kind of straight up indicated that he didn't want to go to Cleveland. But, you know, so from Darnold saying all the right things, so he's got to be the guy you go with. And, you know, so I think he's their guy right now.
He's very, very Philip Rivers-esque. That's kind of his personality. He's very Philip Rivers-esque.
Good call. I'll say this, too, real quick, before we wrap up the NFL, that your new mock draft, Rob. And it sucks, right, because, JQ, you nailed it right on the head because, you know, you had quarterbacks that have been proven, right? I mean, you know, we're still not sure as far as Lamar Jackson and or Baker Mayfield as far, you know, they won the hardware. They looked proven, right? And I still, I can't help Cleveland, I hate to go back. I mean, you missed on Wentz. You had Deshaun Watson right there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just another situation where this guy was proven, like you said, JQ. He won the championship.
Mm-hmm.
He's a winner. He has all the intangibles that you look for. And again, what did you do? You most certainly you missed. You know, and I hate to keep crying over spilt milk, but you know, I don't know who's making the calls, but get it together, man. And Rob said it. You know,
don't get it together.
You made the worst decision. You
don't want to get it together.
Yeah, I know. You made the worst decision, and now you got to get a guy that you know that's just like there. Now you know you don't know. We don't know. We don't have a clear cut guy. We've got to get a guy, and we're gonna be right back, and then. You know, 1-6, I don't know, those odds are great, you know. So, again, here we are again. We don't know what's going to happen, and then, you know, we're going to do this next year. Are Cleveland going to be, you know, hell, draft like team quarterbacks so you get it right? I don't know. I don't know the answer. But, anyway, 2 seconds. So, anyway, Rob, just do your mock draft unless you have anything else to add to that, JQ, and then we'll get ready to wrap up the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared.
Well, I mean, we've covered a lot about the mock draft, and obviously with the latest trade today with the Patriots, I mean, that's the biggest change, of course. I mean, we've pretty much talked about right now I have Darnold going 1 to Cleveland. We've talked about the Giants, and there's so many scenarios that they can go, but right now I have him going Josh Allen. I think it's almost a given that the Jets are going to take Josh Rosen. It just seems like their guy now, and it just seems to be where he's going to fall. And then, you know, we talked about the Giants and their options at number 2, but Cleveland is going to have a ton of options at number 4 as well. We know we're going to take quarterback at number 1, and they have the flexibility to move down here in the trade as well. Or they could have, depending on what the Giants do, I mean, they could have their choice of Barkley, Chubb, or Nelson. And like I said, those three guys are arguably the best players in the draft. And so Cleveland could have their quarterback and have a guy that could be considered the best player in the draft. I mean, if you go Barkley and Darnold, I mean, shucks, you could be set up for success for the future. If you go Barkley, I mean, if you go Darnold and Chubb, I mean, you could have two of the better pass rushers in the game on one team to improve that defense. And then, of course, you know, Quentin Nelson could be in play there too. But I think it's either going to be Barkley or Chubb based on what the Giants do. At number 2 is where the Cleveland.
You just signed a running back, though.
I'm sorry?
You just signed a running back.
I think Barkley's still in play, though. As you see in the NFL, you see it with your Atlanta Falcons. You got two running backs there. You rotate. You see it with my Saints. I think even the Bengals still has a two-man rotation at the running back position. So teams, you know, want to have multiple backs right now. And so I would say Barkley is still in play. And right now, in my latest mock, that's where I have Cleveland going. I am going with Barkley. You know, you have that opportunity. You've seen the last couple of years that we've had some running backs going to top 5 that have led their teams to success. You saw Fournette take his team to the AFC Championship game. And the year before, we saw Ezekiel Elliott, Dallas, the best record in the league for just about the whole season. And they wound up getting upset in the second round of the playoffs. But So we had a couple of running backs for quite some time. We weren't having running backs being picked that high. So Barkley could possibly have some immediate success in the NFL as well. So that will leave Chubb at five to Denver. I can tell you Denver is very high on Quentin Nelson, too, so I could see them also taking him at number five. In Indy, Indy would love for Chubb or Barkley to follow them to number six, but right now I got him taking Quentin Nelson at six. Minka Fitzpatrick, seven to Tampa. Denzel Ward, cornerback, Ohio State to Chicago at eight.
Yes, sir.
Derwin James, safety from Florida State, have him going nine to San Fran. I'm going to skip around a little bit. I have Baker Mayfield falling to Miami at 11. Buffalo, don't know if they're going to be still in the 12 position, but for right now, like I'm taking Marcus Davenport, defensive end from Texas San Antonio. Roquan Smith, linebacker from Georgia, going to Washington. Vita Vea, big defensive tackle from Washington, going to Green Bay at 14. JQ mentioned Cortland Sutton, wide receiver from SMU. I have him going to Arizona at 15. I'll skip around, just go over a few names. Calvin Ridley, wide receiver, Alabama. I still have him tied to Dallas. I've had him tied to Dallas for like three or four straight mocks. Calvin Ridley to the Cowboys. Let's see. Surprise,
hey,
Mason
Rock,
Rudolph.
Yeah, Hey, Rob, you have Calvin going because of the Dez Bryant thing, right? Is that how you have him going because they're not going to re-sign Dez Bryant? Is that where you got that going?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions with that, and there are, you know, definitely there are, you know, there's some questions of how long Dez is going to be with the Cowboys. And also his production is going down tremendously as well. So there's a lot of talk on whether or not the Cowboys wouldn't even pay him, you know, big-time money as well. So this is, like I said, my third or fourth mock straight I've had Ridley going to the Cowboys at 19. Let's see. One surprise, I have Mason Rudolph, quarterback Oklahoma State, into the first round to Cincinnati at 21.
No chance.
Leighton Van Der Esch, linebacker who can really do both. He can play inside and outside from a linebacker standpoint. Have him going 22 to Buffalo from Boise State. We already talked about New England. We can skip that. Isaiah Wynn, big offensive guard, played some center as well from Georgia. I'm going to Carolina at 24. Have the Falcons taking guard / center James Daniels from Iowa at 26. The Saints, I haven't taken DJ Moore, speedy wide receiver from Maryland at 27. Rashawn Evans, obviously Pittsburgh's got some question marks at linebacker due to the big injury that they had last year, so I'm taking Rashawn Evans from Alabama. Let's see what else here. Darius Geis, running back LSU, Jacksonville at 29. Will Hernandez, offensive guard, UTEP, Minnesota. And last pick of the first round, Sam Hubbard, defensive end, Ohio State, Philadelphia. So that's my latest mock. I'm sure it would change at least five or six more times before the actual draft.
Just real quick, a couple things. Looking at that, I appreciate Rob for putting this together, for giving us something to talk about. If I'm Oakland, I don't know if I take Jermaine Edmonds over Roquan Smith. I think that Gruden would just, you know, drool over Roquan Smith for everything that he can do. But I love Mike Hughes and Jerry Alexander cracking that 16 to 17 slot for cornerbacks. I think those dudes have done enough for themselves. If you look at the game film and what they did at the combine to move up into the middle part of this first round. I also like Calvin Ridley to Dallas. I think that makes a lot of sense. Cincinnati, I'm just telling you, and I'm going to go with it again, they believe in Andy Dalton. I just don't see them spending that pick on Mason Rudolph in the first round. And for me personally, I'd rather have Lamar Jackson, but I don't see them taking a quarterback in the first round. They still think Andy Dalton can be that guy. If I'm putting it on my Cincinnati GM hat for the way that they think, I'm still looking at an Isaiah Wynn or Will Hernandez. They still feel like if they improve that offensive line and then get some defensive help and maybe a weapon or two for him later in the draft, that Cincinnati can make a step forward back. I don't agree with that, but that's where I think Cincinnati is, where their head is. I really can't argue anything else. I wonder how Darius Geis would feel about having to be in Leonard Fournette's shadow again. For
that
Jacksonville,
would be issue,
I think. I just don't know if you pull that trigger without having a serious conversation with him, or where he's like, man, not again. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just buying my time and I'm gonna ball out and then I'm going to leave. Like, if you're Jacksonville, I'm not saying it's a bad pick, but, you know, you got to have the right fit for the person coming in. He might be like, man, I'm not backing up this dude for another 4 or 5 years. Like, don't do this to me. Lord Jesus, why? I like DJ Moore to New Orleans, though. He reminds me a lot of Stephon Diggs. And I know it seems like a lazy comparison because they're both Maryland wide receivers. But if you look at the way they perform on the field and their stature, he reminds me a lot of Stephon Diggs. And hey, Tay Gann is getting up there in two. So that's a good move for New Orleans.
Yeah, and New Orleans definitely needs another deep threat on their team, too. I mean, that was the even though they had a lot of success offensively last year, the Saints could definitely use another deep threat from a wide receiver standpoint, and they can use a tight end in the passing game, too. And, I mean, those were two elements that were missing from their offense last year. Obviously, Sean Payton was able to hide it and disguise it, but those were definitely two elements that they were missing. And definitely with Cincinnati, those guards are definitely in play for those considerations for Cincinnati. But we know the Bengals have done some surprising things in the draft over the years, so it's going to be interesting. I was shocked last year when they took John Ross, where they took him at the draft. And so, I mean, that threw me for a surprise, and it threw a lot of people for a surprise, too. So it's going to be, you know, it wouldn't be surprising that Marvin Lewis and the Bengals have something up their sleeve.
Well, I think you had John Watson and Patrick Mahomes, and you take John Ross. That's why I say they won't do it. Because they still feel like Andy Dalton is going to be that guy. And I mean, that's just, as a Cincinnati fan, you read the things I read about it. They say if we get him protected and we've got AJ Green, we re-sign Tyler Eifert and Tyler Boyd and John Ross step up, he can still do big things. And then also with the offensive line, you make it better for Mixon and Gio Bernard. They still are all in on Andy Dalton. That's why I'm like, I see what you're saying, but they don't have that feeling that they're going to spend first-round pick capital on a quarterback. They still believe in Andy Dalton.
You mentioned Mike Hughes and Jaire Alexander. I can tell you right now I have those guys going 16 and 17. Mike Hughes to Baltimore and Alexander to the Chargers at 17. I know the Seahawks would love to get one of those guys at 18. And at the moment, I have them missing out on both of them. We're going right before their pick, 16 and 17. So, you know, the Seahawks could look to move a little bit here. I know they want to get their hands on one of those cornerbacks as well. So, I mean, right now with the Seahawks standing at 18, I haven't taken Mike McGlinchey, offensive tackle from Notre Dame, which is another big need for them. They have to improve
great
on the offensive
them.
Line, too. And I mean, that's they're all of a sudden is a team that has a lot of needs. It was a couple of years ago, they were stacked from a talent perspective. So either way, you know, that'd be interesting if Carroll wants to move up to secure one of those corners, or if he just stand packed to fill, you know, another need on a roster.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'll just say real quickly, the reason why Cincinnati won't draft Lamar Jackson, he didn't go to University of Georgia. If he did, he'd be drafted for the
listen,
I guess it's a given that he's going to take Isaiah Wynn in at 21. He's somebody from Georgia. But John Ross from Washington. they went all the way to Seattle to get a player last year.
I got you. But Andre knows how I am, and he knows that I am 100% on board with that comment. Isaiah Wynn, if he's on the board at that point, even I would take Hernandez. I think Hernandez is a road grader. And if you want to say I want to give Andy Dalton a chance, I get a road grader and I improve my run game, which helps my play action pass. And I still have AJ Green. I would rather have Hernandez. But putting my GM hat on, it's going to be Isaiah Wynn if he's available. I firmly believe that.
And the only reason Wynn has kind of moved up a little bit ahead of Hernandez is that he's a little bit more versatile than Hernandez. He can probably play any one of those three interior positions, where I think most of the NFL view Hernandez strictly as a guard. Wynn could play center if that's where you need him to play. And so he has some more – he has a little bit more versatility than Hernandez has. So, you know, he's probably a guy that can get out, run on sweeps out a little bit better and things like that. And so it'll be interesting. But both of those guys are definitely in play for the Bengals, no doubt about it.
And we lost our center.
Gentlemen, I'm scared.
So you're further bolstering my point.
exactly. So when he can play anywhere in the interior line for wherever you need him to play. And like I say, that's why his stock is just slightly higher at the moment than Hernandez. Doesn't mean, but
you
know.
You.
mock drafts. I haven't met anybody that's got a whole mock draft right. So these are just conversation pieces. But when you do a lot of them, you can say, hey, well, on my fifth draft, I had them slotted there.
Yeah, now listen, I appreciate you putting it together. Like I said, you put the time in, you put thought into it, and it's a great conversation for us to talk about. It's just that being a Cincinnati fan, I have that advantage of knowing that that's not going to be it for them because they're crazy. And it's not necessarily where you're wrong. But we're crazy, and you said before, we do surprising things. So, but the thing I say is the least surprising, if there's a stud Georgia prospect on the board that has that value where we're picking, we're going Georgia. No question.
All right. Well, you better hope he's not drafting Tony Michelle or Nick Chubb at 21.
I wouldn't hate that. I mean, it's a luxury pick, but I wouldn't hate it.
Gentlemen, I'm scared the lady's going to get us, man. But really quickly, I will say 100% mock drafts are very similar to your NCAA brackets. Thank you very much. Hey, Rob, let's talk about the show, man.
Yeah, you know, just about all the mock drafts, you may have like the first five picks are so close to being right, but then after that is a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after that is a crapshoot. Is that one team that's just going to throw it for a loop and just throw out everything, you know, and not to throw the Bengals under the bus, but they were probably that one team last year because nobody had Josh Ross going them that high in the draft last year.
Because everybody else has sense. Go ahead, brother.
Well, you know, he still has time to be a stud. I know he had an injury from rookie year, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
we're less than a month away. It's coming up soon.
Yep. Wrap us up, brother.
Wrap up.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you tuning in. We've been on the air for about an hour and 45 minutes tonight. So you got a lot of sports talk. And so we gave you a lot of pertinent and strong information. You may agree with us or disagree with us. Let us know your thoughts on the show. We would love to hear from you all. Next week, like I said, we're going to be back on Wednesday night. If not, we will be updating you all 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central on next Wednesday. As I mentioned earlier, NFL draft's coming up, NBA playoffs coming up, Major League Baseball is in full swing right now. So we're going to have a lot to talk about on next week. You don't want to miss it. Join us on Wednesday night. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us. I'm not going to go on another baseball rant, but come on, baseball, Major League Baseball, y'all ain't shit. But I appreciate everybody listening to the show and down and listening to the to the OT portion. I'll let you next week. Have a good weekend.
I love how Jakey gets a little bit more ethnic near the end of the night, man. Oh, man. It's crazy. Hey, you guys, it's been a pleasure, guys. And I appreciate you guys dealing with me and getting a little hype, man. It's been a long night. It's been a fun night. But, you know, that's how some things happen. But it's been a pleasure, gentlemen. And let's connect next week, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Good talking to y'all.
Good night, people.
Good night, people.
You as well. Have a good one. Good night, people.